You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Donnell Morgan, Boys Basketball Coach at Park Rose High School. Coach, how you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm doing fantastic. Very windy morning out here, but for a Saturday, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to chat hoops with us. We're looking forward to it. Coach, I want to start by giving you an opportunity to kind of introduce yourself. Give us a little bit about your background, your basketball background and coaching history, and how you ended up as the head boys coach at Park Rose High School.
Wow, this is great. Number one, again, thanks for having me, man. It was an honor to see the invite come across my email the other day. So just honored to be here and talk hoops and my journey a little bit with you. So for me, a young kid, grew up in Tacoma, Washington, went to Henry Foss High School and finished up in 1991. And my playing career took me down to Roseburg, Oregon, where I played at Umpqua Community College from 91 to 93. I was the NWAC Southern Region Player of the Year, All-Star Selection, and went on to sign a Division I scholarship at Idaho State. Where I played 2 years there. My first year, we won the Big Sky, and that was the first time the school had won the Big Sky Conference title since 1973, and so it was a 20-year drought, and they still haven't won since 1993, so we're proud of that accomplishment as a team. And first-team All-Big Sky, and then my second year, I was Big Sky All-Tournament selection as well. And from there, you know, I started my professional career in 1995, where I traveled to Chile. I played a season in Chile, Honduras, two seasons in New Zealand, a season in Malta, Uruguay, Iceland, and I concluded my career there in Iceland in 2000. And that's when I finished up my basketball playing career. And I just figured, you know, what was I going to do next? You know, I still had that itch. I wasn't an old guy. You know, I still had all my, you know, limbs. I wasn't walking weird. You know, the game didn't actually retire me. I was just ready to do something else. And I had a great opportunity. I was watching my former high school play in the state tournament, and they actually won the state tournament in 2000. And I actually saw my old ball coach from Umpqua. He was in the stand, but he didn't see me. And I was like, wow, there's coach right there. And a week later, I gave him a call and asked him if I could come down to Roseburg and help him and be one of his assistants. And he was like, immediately, yes, Donnell, let's get you down here. And next thing you know, man, I'm down at Roseburg in the year 2000, the season. It would have been like the season of 2001, 2002, around that time. And after two seasons, coach called it a career after 16 years, and I was promoted to head coach at Umpqua Community College in 2002. And I held that position until I resigned it in 2009. We made two trips to the NWAC tournament, finishing third. And that was a real highlight of my career as a college basketball coach, and just really enjoyed that experience. And it really kickstarted my life, you know, as far as what I was going to do professionally. I landed here in Portland after a short stint back in Tacoma in 09 to 2012, and I landed back here in the Portland area, Oregon area, back in 2012, and landed a seat there with Pat Strickland and his group at Jefferson High School. And my first year, we beat, can't remember the school up there down in Eugene, but we went back-to-back 2013, 2014, and just two great ball clubs, man. Perseverance, those kids are just amazing. And just to be a part of that program, when you see them play from the outside, you know, there's a lot of things that's said about those kids and things of that nature. But being on the inside of the program, you learn a lot about just how hard they work, just how hard that coaching staff worked, and it really gave me another breath of fresh air to say, you know, when I get another opportunity, that I would take it, and that came by way of Park Rose in the summer or fall of 2017 is when I started my tenure at Park Rose, and I've been there for 4 years, just going into my fifth year, and excited about it. And my journey has taken me from the Northwest around the world and back to the Northwest, and a lot of knowledge, a lot of ups and downs, but wouldn't trade it for the world, and just love giving back that knowledge to the kids.
That's awesome, Coach. I want to ask about, you know, you got to travel the world playing basketball. I would assume basketball is probably different in every country that you played in. How was hoops different overseas in your travels, and how has that experience impacted you as a coach and the knowledge that you share with your kids?
You know what I learned from being overseas is that they may not be as talented as the American player, but I can say those guys play very, very hard. And one thing that I took from my first year out in Chile is that I had to learn to be a professional. It's one thing when you're in college, your coaches are telling you to be a certain place, be in the weight room, be at the track, get your lift in, get your rest. Now all of a sudden, immediately your season is done in college in like March. And then next, you know, April, May, then boom, you're on this plane heading out of the country in June. And you have to put all these things together. And one thing that I learned when I came back and I finished my career and I became a coach was always take the game seriously. When you step between those lines, you know, honor the game, you know, honor your opponent, honor your teammates, honor the fans by just playing hard, you know. And I really feel that if you were to come to watch an Umpqua Community College basketball game, if you were to come to watch a Park Rose High School basketball game, one thing you will say is, gosh, I know, how do you get those kids to play so hard? And it's a certain buy-in that you have to have, but also I've walked it, I'm able to talk it, but also I'm able to hold myself accountable, and which in return our team has a way of holding each other accountable. And that's really what I took from those travels, is that the respect of the game, respect of your teammates, the fans, and just the game in general, because when it's over, and you don't want to leave anything left on that floor. So I take those memories of finding myself as a person through hard work.
You had the opportunity to be a head coach at the college level and now a head coach at the high school level. What are some of the similarities or differences, and how do you adjust kind of what you do and how you coach based on the level that you're at?
You know, the college ranks, being at the community college level, you know, we're getting a lot of the kids that, you know, you get into this college level, and then when they arrive, a lot of them weren't as skilled or where I thought they were, where they needed to be entering into a college program. And so, you know, coming from the professional ranks, going to college suited me just perfectly. It was just the right time. You know, when I say timing is everything, after being a professional player and then going right to the college ranks was right where I was supposed to be, because the intensity was there, the competitiveness, the teaching aspect of it. And after doing that for 9 years, you know, I learned how to pace myself. You know, I learned how to pace myself and really slow the game down and teach these kids. And after taking a couple years off, two, three years off, and then landing at Jefferson and then getting my own program at Park Rose, the one thing I learned was teach them like where they're going. Don't teach them where they're at. Teach them to where they're going. And I really feel that all the drills that I put in, the study halls, the accountability, the things we give them as young men, it's really trying to get them to think critically, to think about the next level. And I don't coach them to where they are here in high school. I'm coaching them as where they want to go as young men, whether they're going to be going to college just to go to school, trade school or if some are talented enough to continue their basketball careers in college. I want to give them next level thinking, next level problem solving methods. So when they get to that next phase in life, they can always say, hey man, we did this with Coach Morgan. Oh, we was doing this with our basketball team, you know. So that's what we try to do here at Park Rose is coach them not to where they are, but where they're going to go.
As a college coach, you got to go through the recruiting process, both as an assistant and as a head coach. I'm curious, what advice would you have to high school coaches, maybe that have kids that want to go play in the NWAC, D3, D2, D1? How can we as high school coaches help those kids get to where they want to go?
One thing kids have to realize, it doesn't matter where you go. Being a former player in high school, I was first team all league. I was first team all state. While some of my friends are going to UConn, UW, University of Oregon, Oregon State, I chose a solid college for me, which was Umpqua Community College. I chose a school, number one, where I could play. I knew I was coming from high school and I wanted to play. I didn't want to go to this big D1, D2, D3 school and I'm stuck on a bench, you know, vying for 15 minutes a game. I went straight from high school playing the whole game right into college playing the whole game. And when I got to where I was at Division I, I was skilled. I was mature. I had the classroom piece behind me. And I think the biggest thing we can do as coaches for our kids is be real with them. Because at the end of the day, we spend so much time with these kids. We spend 4 years with these kids. We spend more time with these kids than anyone else in the school other than their parents, you know, of course. So when it comes time to those decisions, I think it's up to us to be real with our players about the level they are as players. And that can come in many shapes and forms. You know, a lot of times we need to still work on our strength, our quickness, our speed. And then it comes down to, is this kid able to go to a bigger school and not get lost in the transition of coming from high school to college, and then that the academic piece falls off, and are they able to handle that being away from home aspect? So I think the best thing we can do as coaches is keep our kids close to us, stay close to their families and whoever the guardians are, and be real with them, because just because you don't get to your goal coming straight out of high school, it doesn't mean you can't work your way and fulfill your dreams. Just like I did, I was a community college player, product of that level at NWAC, and like coaches always taught me, they prepared me for where I was going. So I wasn't coached like a high school guy. I wasn't coached like a junior college guy. My head coach, Rod Snook, was an Oregon University assistant under Munson. I want to say it was Dan Munson or Don. I think the father Munson,
yeah,
that coached at Oregon, and I believe they came from Idaho to Oregon. And so I was always coached by some really, really great coaches. And when I got to Idaho State, my head coach was Herb Williams, and Herb Williams actually played professional basketball overseas as well. So I was fortunate to have that pedigree of people in my life. And so now I get the opportunity to instill what they've done for me and be real to my players and say, hey, it doesn't shame anyone. I mean, even yourself, you have to be real with yourself, because this journey, man, it doesn't matter if you go to NWAC, there's still tough players there. There are really good players there, and you have to go in there and grind and work it every day just to get playing time. So being real with these kids, being real with the family, and not getting them too far over their skis where they get somewhere and it doesn't work out. And that's the advice I would give coaches, you know. Don't get caught up in the hype. Make sure you keep these kids grounded and give them the best advice.
You talked a little about coaching them for the next level, what they're going to be, not who they are. Want to maybe dig into that a little bit. When a kid comes into your program, you get them for approximately 4 years, unless you start working with them at the youth level, of course. But as a freshman at Park Rose, you start working with them. By the time they graduate high school and finish in your program, what are the values that you hope to instill in your kids, and how do you go about instilling those values in your players?
Yeah. You know, the beauty and unique part about my job and my task is that I get a lot of inner city kids. I get a lot of kids that look like me, a lot of kids that talk like me, and a lot of kids that quite honestly acted like I did when I was their age. And so it's almost like, man, a blessing and a dream job that I have, because not only do I get to impact basketball, which is what they love and we're connected that way, but I also get to influence them in life. And everything that we talk about, whether it's a win, whether it's a loss, whether it's a missed class, whether it's, you know, discipline actions, we always talk about life. So when a kid enters into the program and, you know, from in ninth grade, technically they're only a few months removed from eighth grade, right, from middle school. So, you're dealing with that aspect of trying to get them caught up to where they are physically, where they are skill-wise in basketball, and trying to get them caught up mentally to be able to go and be able to handle the rigors of a season, you know. And I really feel when a kid enters the program as a freshman or as a sophomore in those earlier years, I really feel that when they leave, the one thing they can say is that Coach Morgan cares about me. Coach Morgan cared about my success, probably more than I cared about my own success. He held me accountable. He taught me how to work every day. And I think, you know, Derek, the biggest compliment that was paid to me was my best player, Demonte Burns. We fell to South Albany last full season when we were in the playoffs, and it was a great game. It was a back-and-forth battle of a game. And kudos to South Albany. The crowd was fantastic. Again, we're coming from the inner city, so, you know, a lot of my kids are going to look a lot different from where we're going, right, where we're going to go play. But one thing I can say is one of my best player on my team, probably not always the nicest kid or probably not always the kid that's going to do the right thing, did the right thing. We took the loss. And the coach called me later in that week and said that Demonte Burns went to him after the game and said great job to him and his team and his coaching staff. And those are things that I didn't even know. So when I found that out and that he did that, of all players did that, from the time he was a freshman, I had to discipline him and take him out of games and sit him a couple games for missing class. We had to discipline him in 10th grade. And then as a junior, I saw it coming. At that last game, we took a loss. But again, it's not about the game. It's about life. And when I saw and heard about that, that lets me know right there that what we're doing, what I'm teaching, what we're trying to instill in these kids is working. And that made me feel good. Of course, I wanted to get to the state tournament, but I will take that attitude and that ending every single day if it means changing a kid's life around and they're better kids moving forward.
You talk about, you know, coaching teams that come from the inner city. You're going to go to places and, you know, the teams you're playing might look different, act different. It's just going to be different, right? How do you prepare your teams for that? I mean, that's probably an added thing that maybe you have to do in your situation that not all coaches have to deal with. So how do you go about preparing your kids for that situation to give them the best chance to be successful that you can?
Yeah, leadership, you know, and here's the thing, what I have to do that a lot of coaches in the state don't have to do. The day before we board the bus, we talk about where we're going. We talk about the area where we're going. And we're talking about how we're going to conduct ourselves as young men. And I always say to them, if someone says something to you or if someone says something to us, the first person you look at is me. If I don't flinch, if I don't give it anything, neither do you. We're not politicians. We're not here to go back and forth with anyone. We're here to play a basketball game. We're here to honor the game of basketball. We're here to honor our opponents, the referees, the coaches, and families of those kids. We can't control what every fan's going to say. We can't control what every person's going to say, and that's not what this is about. This is the spirit of competition. And the beauty about it is that we get to play against people that don't look like us. And then in turn, they get to play against players and young students, athletes that don't look like them. The game of basketball is the best teaching classroom that you can have, and I swear by it. You know, I know other sports were going to say the same about their sport, but basketball has been so infectious and a positive thing in my life where it's taken me all over the place with many different cultures. So it doesn't matter what people say. It matters of how we conduct ourselves, and it's not about the action, it's the reaction. And we choose not to react to anything negative. We're going to always take the high road, and as a leader, they should look to me. They look, and I make that very, very clear when we get on that bus and we take a road trip. Look to me, stay with me, because I won't guide you wrong. I've been called several things in the past in the spirit of basketball, and you take those things. And to me, as a former player, being a young guy, it was almost an appreciation, like, you know, wow, I made it. I'm being called names, right? I know nothing's going to happen to me, but that's the spirit of competition. And I think if we look at it that way, instead of always being so reacting to one or two, disrespectful people in that crowd, maybe they're the ones that's removed, but the whole city or town is not tagged that way, you know. And I can speak on that because I worked and lived in Roseburg for 9 years of my life. And I can honestly say that there's some good people there, but there are also some, you know, some people that, you know, could give that place a bad name, just like anywhere. So we talk about it. My superintendent understands that when I was hired for this position, it was not about basketball. It was about raising and mentoring 36 young men from our C team all the way up into the varsity team. And I take that very seriously, and we don't get into that stuff. We don't give it a wink. But we do have to talk about it. We do have to equip ourselves, which other coaches in the state, quite frankly, don't have to do.
Right. As we get ready for the upcoming season, we as coaches kind of have to deal with the pandemic season, right? And in a lot of ways, we're kind of starting over, kind of reestablishing our culture and expectations. Do you have any intentional plans or activities or anything that you're going to do to kind of reestablish your culture this fall with your program?
Absolutely. I think I'm in the same boat as everyone else. I know some places in the state, they're able to gather. They were able to do more things than we could do here in Multnomah County. Our gyms were closed. Our things were locked. We couldn't get together like other places could. But I really think what we've tried to do is we've got our kids out on the track. It was rough for them because a lot of them been sitting home. You know, they haven't been doing much. And if they do anything, they're doing more of a workout than an actual, you know, work out with a real coach, not this AAU stuff, man. You know, I'm not a big AAU guy. You know, I'm a old school guy. Get on the track. We're running. We're doing plyometrics. You know, we're in the weight room. And so reestablishing because, you know, you've been doing this a long time as well, coach. That's where your culture is started. You know, the grind, the how hard it's going to be, how tough it's going to be. Running on that track, running those laps, getting that 2-3 miles in, and then going from there. And, yes, I mean, I have a brand-new ball club. You know, we had a very senior-loaded team last year, which I didn't even get to see the fruits of that labor because a lot of them opted out or they had jobs and they were doing other things, you know, with the pandemic kind of switched their focus. So I have lots of freshmen and sophomores. And I have a couple juniors that have been with me since they were freshmen. So hopefully they will take the lead and get us through and through these early stages of the season. But, yeah, definitely have to reestablish our culture. And I'm going to make it as tough as possible once November opens. When we're able to get in there in November, is probably going to be the toughest 2 to 3 weeks of their life. But the message is, if you can get through this, if you can get through me standing on your back and yelling at you, you're going to be able to get through the tough schedule that we have. I mean, we start on the road at Reynolds, and that's kind of a city thing for us, because Park Rose and Reynolds are about 15 minutes apart. So, you know, we're looking forward to our opener. We're looking forward to seeing what this new generation and this new regime of Park Rose basketball is going to hold for us. But I definitely feel that I'm in the same boat as everyone else, man. And when the ball goes up, no one has any mercy or pity on you. It's go time. No one cares after that.
That's right.
No one cares, brother, at all.
No kidding. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach Morgan right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your OBCA membership. Membership includes access to exclusive resources from high school coaches across the country, as well as access to Lucio Sports Technology, the same technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Donnell Morgan. Coach, if I were to come watch you guys practice for 2 hours or how long you practice, what would I see? What would I hear? What would I feel? What kind of energy would there be in the gym as I was watching?
Always moving. I'm not one of those coaches that's going to spend 3 hours in the gym. I feel like if you can get in there, hour 45 minutes to 2 hours, you're going to get everything accomplished if you're keeping things moving. So from the time we get in, we're warming up, we're stretching, we're going right into some drills. We're going right into a fast break drill that I learned in college called 3-on-2 continuous. And if you, I recommend that drill at every level. I've done it with eighth graders I've coached. I've done it with ninth graders. I've done it. And it's a drill that just keeps everyone moving and you get every aspect of the game. Obviously, for me, I'm not blessed with a whole lot of great shooters. I'm blessed with a lot of athletes. So what I try to do is get us moving and playing quicker to react quicker, so when we go and play other teams, they're not going to be used to the pace of thinking that fast. You know, other than Wilsonville, man, those guys are juggernauts, and I love their coach. Roach is the man. He's the man, brother. He's my guy. But, you know, we try to get teams to speed up. Without a shot clock, I mean, what the heck, man? You got to try to, manufacture possessions, right, somehow. You know, you got to get the ball moving somehow. So a lot of times we're trying to get our kids to understand, yeah, we may be giving up something, but it's for a reason, and we have to be good in certain areas because we're giving up certain things. So you're going to see a lot of up-pace. You're going to see a lot of yelling and screaming and correcting and all that stuff. You're going to see a lot of in-your-face stuff. And, you know, I'm on a podcast, right? And I'm sure the coach is going to hear this, but I'm an old school guy. But and my mentor, the coach that I loved and took a lot of guidance from was John Thompson. Everything was discipline. Everything was discipline. And that's what you're going to see. But at the end of it, at the end of our practice, you're going to see a lot of hugging. You're going to see a lot of joking. You're going to see a lot of, man, if I was your age, I would have did this to you, you know. So although it can come off as, whoa, Donnell's this big old imposing dude, and these little dudes are like, whoa. But at the end of the day, again, what I said before in this podcast and, you know, when we were talking in this conversation, it's understanding that I got you. I want you to succeed. And then I talk to him. Sometimes it's not going to come out like you want, but understand it's coming out with love, fellas. And I want to see you all get to certain places. So you're going to see all that in my practice, from yelling, screaming, the intensity, And then at the end, bringing it back to a human element of, hey, man, good job, fellas. Get to class tomorrow. Be ready to go. And, you know, all those things that they need to hear on the way out the door. And definitely some laughs, you know, because the work is done. The work is done. And we leave it there. We don't take it away. We always make sure we leave on a positive note to make sure guys going home feeling good about teammates, coaches, and the work that we just put in.
Do kids, like say they're coming into their first varsity practice, or maybe they're a freshman, so they're maybe not used to being coached the way you coach them. Do you give them any sort of warning of what's going to happen, or maybe do your leaders warn them? Because I think sometimes what happens is, you know, kids that haven't been coached that way before, right? And
exactly.
Even maybe a less intense coach than yourself will get on a kid, and all of a sudden, like, they're taking it personally, right? Like, they just haven't taken that coaching or constructive criticism well. They're not taking it well. So I'm just kind of curious, do you give them a warning? Is there a warning? Or how do you deal with those kids that at first are they're like, why? Why does coach hate me? You know what I mean? And they're taking it all personally.
Yep, yep. The first thing I do is, you know, when we're in the off season and we're working out on the track, the first thing, I mean, it's more laid back, you know, more laid back. It's just the time of year, you know. But I will say, some of you guys have never dealt with a guy like me. But it's more in a joking manner. And then once we arrive that first few days of practice, and when I see certain things going a certain way, I always jump my captains. I always make sure that they know that this is on you, that you did not warn them about me. You should have told them what it means when you walk into the door. So I always go back to them, because that's that accountability that I'm showing the team. And I'm showing those three or four guys that I have a lot of confidence in you, that this is your team. There's certain things coaches can't do. We can't be around them. We can't be in that circle anymore, right? We're the leaders of it. So I always jump my captains about if you haven't warned these guys of what it's like to come in here, then that's on you. It's going to be, that's just your type of season. I've played basketball. I've coached for years. And I like to say my job is pretty secure. And I'm pretty good with how my basketball career went. Are you going to be confident and you're going to be feeling good when your career is over? So I always put it back on them. And as we progress through the season, I'm like, man, you guys know how I am. And I'm not changing. I'm a consistent guy. You know, when it comes to discipline, how you're treating teachers, how you're treating other students in the school, people are looking up to you. People are looking, they want to be down here with us, and they can't, because maybe they're not as good, they're not as confident, and you guys are a special group that a lot of people look up to, and I make sure that they understand that. So, I always put it back on my guys that's been around me long enough to know, okay, yeah, he's not going to do anything, man. He's just down there. He's just going to be yelling and screaming. Just put your head down and keep going. So, but you are correct. Some kids, man, that they've never had that, and they come in, you can immediately see when I get on them, the body language goes down, and you can see it. And that's when I'm right still back in them. I'm like, no, 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 no. You know, get yourself back up. This is not that. This is not that. We need to be sharper. We need to, I'm doing this for a reason. And when they do something really good, I even stop practice, man, and run over and hug them in front of the whole, in front of the whole practice. And it does something for them. You know I've been riding them. I know I'm trying to make them better. I see the potential. And they, sometimes your kids are going through things at home. Especially my kids, they're going through things in school. And so all of a sudden they come to practice and this guy's demanding everything from me. And sometimes, you know, they just, you know, they're still learning their bodies. They're still learning how hard and how good they can do things at the pace. And when they do it right, man, I make sure they know that. I make sure they it's equal. It's an equal deal, man. So I love it. I love it at times. Sometimes it's like I need two Tylenols extra strength after practice. But it's cool. It's cool. It has it. Yeah. It equals out. It definitely equals out.
Absolutely. That's awesome. what do you think is the best thing you do as a coach?
I think the best thing that I do as a coach is number one, I respect the team that we're playing. You know, before I get into the other stuff, I always love watching, and I always say this to Coach Roach and other coaches in the league, you know, when I see some of their players, and, you know, I'm a kid guy. You know, I'm an executive director of a nonprofit, and we work with kids in the Park Rose community, so I'm a kid guy. And I'm a basketball guy. I love sports. I think sports does something for kids that no other thing, you know, other entity can do for a kid. So when I see kids working hard and doing things that the coach is asking them to do, I make sure that kid knows that, and I'll tell that coach that. So number one, I'm a fan. I'm a fan first. And I think that what I do best as a coach is really relate the game of basketball to the real world. Because everything from the time they walk into a program to into my program or the time they meet me, everything is about life. You know, I can have you dribble through cones all damn day. I can have you doing layup drills all day. I can have you shooting jump shots and timed and all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, practice is only an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours, however many hours coaches put in. And then you have the rest of the day to live. And I think for me, with my kids, when they're done with practice, they have to get on the public transportation. They have to travel through bad neighborhoods. They have to travel through gang-infested, drug-infested neighborhoods. And so my thing to them is always understand that, you know, be safe out there. You know, we need to be back here tomorrow. And I always have early, early morning practice on Saturday. I start at like 7:30, 8 o'clock. Because it keeps them out of that other stuff that they could be doing. So my thing is always to hold them accountable and be a real person to them. I think one of the best texts I received from a player in high school, and I never thought I'd be a high school coach, man. That's the crazy part. I never thought I'd be doing this after, you know, I'm a teacher of men. So high college is perfect for me. And it's weird how it reversed where now I get to mold young men into having them prepared and ready to go when they're freshmen in the college. Because I was fortunate to start my career on the other side of it in college, and they were coming to me. Now I get to prepare them for that next journey. So I feel like I'm a real person to them. I'm a resource to them. I'm an outlet. I'm more than a basketball coach. And so I feel like that part of it, I'm really good at. I may not be the I'll be very honest with you, Derek. Man, I am not the best X's and O's guy, but I can draw up a defense to stop somebody. And I always tell my kids, if you can stop someone, and if you can rebound, limit your turnovers, and hit your free throws, damn it, you'll be in every game. You will be in every game, and after every game, if we win, we look at those four boxes. If we lose, we look at those four boxes. And that's the game of basketball. It's not complex. We make it that way sometimes. But at the end of the day, it's rebounding. It's limiting your turnovers, hitting your free throws, you know. And you're going to be in those games, man. You're going to be in those games. So. And just really, really getting them to understand the human aspect of it. The game is over. You know, we battled. We may have had an interaction with another player, but we're going to shake that player's hand because it's the spirit of competition. And when my kids get on the bus, we travel, and we're respectful. And I think that's the best thing I am as a coach, is that I can take kids that that have different backgrounds, upbringings, coming from different homes, and we come together and we act the same. And that's the best thing I can give them as young kids of color and going into this world today. It's your integrity, it's your character, and it's who you are as a person that's going to continue to get you far in life.
Absolutely. Well said, Coach. Well said. I want to talk about defense philosophy. You guys play up-tempo. And you talked a little bit about why that is earlier. What are some of the key things, maybe key coaching points you teach within pressure defense? So are there specific things that you're teaching in terms of like on the ball or help side? Or I know you guys have done some like 1-3-1 stuff. What are kind of the key teaching points that you teach your kids to lead to turnovers or bad shots and then get the pace moving?
You know, and it's no secret. I can tell you everything we do, man, and it doesn't matter because, you know, you're scouted. People know what we're going to do. We go 1-3-1. We'll go 2-1-2. We'll do that out of the zone look. We'll pressure man and we'll run and jump you. The key part about it is keeping the ball to one side. And we walk through it. I mean, from day one, we walk through the importance of keeping it to one side. And I got that method from Dick Bennett, who used to coach at Wisconsin Green Bay. I actually played in that type of system when I was in college at Idaho State, where we kept the ball to one side and we led the Big Sky in steals. In fact, I was nationally ranked behind Jason Kidd. My name appeared in under USA Today back in the day, averaging 3.5 steals a game at the time. And we just try to be active, keeping it to a side. And if we can keep it to a side, we know we have numbers. We know we have numbers. And we try to get the ball out of the middle at all costs, whether we're pressing, whether we're in half court. It needs to get out of the middle, because if we're done, like we're gutted, you know, if you get to the middle, we're basically done, because that's where the help is coming. And we try to get kids to understand that you're not guarding a man. Yes, when we pick up a man, who are you guarding? But at the end of the day, it becomes a team defense. You're not actually guarding this person by yourself, because you need to be looking at who you're helping, who's the next guy, you know. So, and to be very honest with you, it's a very, very tough defense to play. Kids don't usually pick it up until probably the end of the year. And then they get better the next year, and they get better the next year. But it's a very, very tough defense to pick up. It was tough for my kids coming into college to pick it up. But once they did, holy man, it was just fun to watch, you know. And it's a lot of chaos. It's a lot of chaos, you know. And that's why a lot of times offense don't look as crisp and clean as other teams, because we're exerting so much energy at the other end that we're knocking you out of what you're trying to do. And I like to say it's controlled chaos. We know what we're trying to do, and if teams get into that type of game with us, we feel that we have a better chance of winning those muddled-up games and, you know, getting kids to think a little bit, because we may switch something up in the middle of it, you know, and next thing you know, teams are like, whoa, you're in this now. And all of a sudden they practice against it, but they don't know when it's coming and will hit you. It's just about understanding the game. For me, when I'm making those calls, it's almost like I'm playing in the game. I'm understanding when it's time to switch it up, when it's time to go back to something, you know, and especially if we're in one of those low moments where we can't get a bucket and things are just not falling and the offense is not clicking, I have to do something, you know, to try to get us going, to get some layups, to get some easy ones. And then everything kind of, we're an emotional group. I should say that. We're a very emotional group. And when they're playing emotionally and they're checked in and tapped in emotionally, we're pretty fun to watch.
How much time do you spend, you know, with running multiple defenses? I would assume that you have to spend quite a bit of time in practice working on those things, right? So
everything.
How do you split up practice to to focus on each one so that it's effective?
We break everything down. I'll take a group of my, you know, post guys down to one end, and then my assistant coaches, they'll take the guards down to one end, and they're working on the ball, keeping the ball out the middle on the perimeter. We're down there working on fronting the post, how to switch it for guys going baseline, how to do those things. And so we'll probably do about 25 to 30 minutes of that, and the kids hate it. They hate it because, you know, it's so controlled. They want to get out and go, right? And so we'll do that, and then we'll bring it all together. We'll bring, you know, we'll take a quick break, some water, whatever, and then we'll bring it all together where we're putting all the aspects of it together, maybe 3-on-3, it'll be 4-on-4, and then we go 5-on-5 with it. So it's a breakdown of everything, and we feel that even if we're doing this half court, we show them how this extends to full court. All the principles are the same. It's the same principle. So the easier I can, like, and here's the crazy part. It's easier to teach defense early in the season because the offense mm-hmm. takes a while, especially if you have new players. If you got a whole new team and you don't have a feeder program and, you know, you don't have these opportunities to work with these kids, defense is something that we can pick up early in the season. And we're constantly working on our offense. And by the time league starts, that's when we've turned the corner offensively and we're starting to look better. And that's really where you want to be peaking anyways for those last 14 games. So so for us, the first month of practice is really establishing our identity in who we are. This is who we are. This is our calling card. This is going to get us to state. This is going to get us into the playoffs. This. And when they buy in, we talk about moving the ball, sharing the ball. You know, it's tough to guard a ball that's moving all the time. It's tough to guard a player that's moving all the time. It's tough to beat a team defense that's always moving and talking and have their hands in the lane trying to get a tip. So it's pretty intense. It's most of the practice, you know. I mean, I don't care if you miss a shot, but if you're missing a defensive assignment, then I'm going nuts. I'm right. going nuts in practice. I'm going nuts in practice. So,
do you guys force baseline? Talk about feeling the side. Are you going to give up the baseline if you get beat, or do you want to not give up the baseline?
We don't want to give up baseline. We want to force you to the baseline, but we want to cut that off. So when we do cut that off, we figure like, man, if we get them going baseline and you have one foot on that out of bounds line, they can only do one or two things, and that's either charge into you, and then we have a double team right there, and then hopefully they're blowing a call out, you know, so, or we can get a steal or a tip. But we're forcing baseline, and let's say the guy gets around us, but you know, we're going to continue to have the same principles. So if they get around our guy on the baseline, we should have help right underneath the basket as well. So constantly rotating. We're pinching middle, and then, you know, when the ball is kicked out, we're just kind of chopping down with a hand up, boxing out. The percentages get a lot better for us when the ball is kicked out for a three than guys getting layups and backdoors and things of that nature. But we have some great shooters in our league, man. So a lot of times it's like, oh, gosh, here we go. Like, is this guy going to be the one tonight? But again, we try to put so much pressure on those shooters that by the third and fourth quarter, those legs, the things that they were hitting early, they're coming up a little short, you know, toward the end of the game. So it's a long game. There's a method to the madness, and a lot of kids, you know, I mean, a lot of teams have kind of went under that pressure a little bit, and some, you know, are just disappointed, and, you know, but that's the sword you have to fall on, and that's the, you know, you have to understand who you are as a team and your strengths, and that's proven to be ours.
All right. We're going to take another break. When we return, Coach Morgan will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
The Oregon Basketball Coaches Association is excited to announce the Central Oregon Regional Youth Coaches Clinic. The clinic will be held on Sunday, November 7th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. at Summit High School in Bend, Oregon. If interested, please find our registration page at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Donnell Morgan, boys basketball coach at Park Rose High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put 35 seconds on a timer, a.k.a. a shot clock, and I'm going to ask you some rapid-fire questions. So they should have 1 to 2 word answers, and we'll see how many questions you can get through in that 35 seconds.
Let's do it.
All righty. 35 seconds on the timer. We are starting now. Do you think Oregon high school basketball should have a shot clock?
Absolutely, yes.
Should be implemented at the sub-varsity levels?
Yes.
If you're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds, do you foul?
Yes.
What's your favorite way to guard on-ball screens?
Heads up front, let your guys slide through.
Do you think the high school three-point line should be moved back?
No.
What's your favorite pregame meal?
Oh, gosh, great one. Great. Let's say chicken Alfredo with broccoli.
Ooh, I like that. And that's time, but I have one more question that I like to ask every coach, which is, what's one word officials would use to describe you?
Positive.
Beautiful. That's great. I like
positive.
It.
Positive.
That's a good one, Coach. I don't know. This is 70-something episode. I don't think anybody said positive yet. So that's a good thing. We could all probably be a little more positive. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, the funny part about it is, I'm 48 now. I started this journey 20 years ago. I became a head coach at 28 years old at the college ranks. And I just remember having all this intense energy, man. I was in every single play. And now, you know, me and the referees, we can talk. I can have a conversation with them. When I get a little bit too far out there, they'll kind of like, come on, Donnell, man, we're working. I'm like, you're right, guys. You know what? And again, it's bringing that human side of it. So when we go into the locker room and if my players are chirping at the referees, understanding I'm the leader, I have to be able to hold myself accountable for my players. So I've learned to be positive with the referees and, you know, I get my opportunity to talk, then I talk.
Coach, you mentioned that you are in favor of the shot clock at the high school level, which could be coming to Oregon potentially in the 2022 season with the recent NFHS decision. Can you elaborate on why you're in favor of the shot clock at the high school level?
I just think where the game is going and where the game has been, I just feel like with our state, I think we need to have our kids prepared for that next level. You know, we're sitting here between California and Oregon and then Washington, and, you know, a lot of our kids are going to be integrated with those kids, and especially when they get to NWACS or wherever they're going to go, they need to be prepared. I think our kids are skilled. I think we have some great kids and at every level here in our state. And I just want them to have the best opportunity to succeed when they get to their next stops as student athletes. So, and I think it makes the games funner for the fans. It makes it more exciting. It gives every team that opportunity that you're never quite out of a game. And it gives that feel that on any given night, anyone can get beat. Because you can't just do certain things. You have to actually play the game. You have to, you have to play the whole game. Where with the shot clock, you can get a lead and sometimes things can change, you know. So
mm-hmm.
I'm a huge fan. That might keep me around for another 5 years if they do that.
There you go. Coach, you've seen and played a lot of basketball all over the world. I'm curious if you've got a good story of maybe the strangest or weirdest or goofiest thing that you've ever seen in a basketball gym.
Strangest thing. I was playing in Chile, my first year out, man, professional player. And the city that I played in was called Concepcion. And we had to travel up to Santiago, which is the capital, to play a game. And we're playing against we're probably sitting in first. We're like third. So it was a pretty big game for both teams. And we had beat them the first time around down at our place. So we're traveling up to play them. And, you know, the crowd was intense, man. And when you're playing outside the country, it's like, I don't know if you ever watched a soccer game in South America or Europe, how crazy those fans get. Mm-hmm. And so I'm this kid, man. I'm this young kid straight out of college, probably about 22 at the time. But I'm having a dominant season. I'm having a great season. So anyway, we're playing a game. And all of a sudden, you know, we're doing really well, you know, and I'm gesturing to the fans. You know, they probably understand nothing I'm saying. I don't understand nothing they're saying, but I'm just having fun, man. We're doing well. And next thing I know, I'm playing defense. And all you hear is this big boom. I mean, like it was a boom, like an earthquake or something. But someone has threw a big glass jug of water onto the floor, and it just burst out of everywhere. And, I mean, if you could have seen, like, 10 guys on a court flying off the floor, that's what we were. We were like, what the hell is that, right? But that was the craziest thing. And I think another one last one. Is I was in Honduras the following year. So I played in Chile, and so I'm like thinking I've seen everything, right? Well, I didn't. So I get to Honduras, and it's so hot there. It's really, really hot that you can't practice or play until like 8 o'clock at night. And they have one gym. It's like one gym that all the teams travel to play in. So it's a pretty crazy setting, man. It's like nuts in there. So when I walk in the gym, I'm talking about a few thousand. I mean, it was packed. It was packed. Mm-hmm. And I walk in the gym, and I see the court, but then I see this big barbed wire fence around the court, like some type of gladiator. It was like you're going into this gladiator dome type thing to play inside this caged. And I'm like, why do they have barbed wire around the court? And there's this, you know, my team didn't speak a lot of English, but they're like, oh, no, you'll see Morgan. You'll see why Morgan. And we start playing, and next thing you know, there's beer bottles flying, and thank God those barbed wire was there to stop the bottles from hitting me or anyone on that floor for that matter. Yeah, man, it definitely hardened me up. It toughened me up. And, yeah, the game is serious, man. The game is very serious outside these borders, so. I enjoyed every minute of it, though. But that's the crazy part about it. Once you get used to it, you become an animal, too. So, man, I got used to it, and we had some fun. We had some fun with it.
Yeah. So, with language barrier, Coach, I'm curious, was trash talking easier or harder overseas? What do you think?
Oh, harder.
Harder?
It was harder for me. I couldn't get my point across.
Yeah,
you know, because they can easily play it off like they don't understand what the heck I'm talking about, right? So
yeah,
it was trying to plead your case to a referee. He just thinks he's trying to trash talk an opponent. They don't understand what the heck you're saying, but they're trash talking the hell out of me. So I have no idea what they're saying either. So, yeah, it was interesting. Once I learned a few words, and once I had been there a few times and been to a few different Hispanic countries, I started picking up words, so I understood what they were saying, and I can come back a little bit. So it took me
there
time,
you go.
But I'll figure it out.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about team captains earlier and putting it on them to kind of warn the newcomers about how things are going to go. How do you go about selecting who your team captains are?
You know, I go off a couple of things. You know, definitely you can tell who the guys on the team gravitate to. You know, it's kind of a peck that you can tell. You can kind of sense who's the guy off the court, you know, who has the skill set. And sometimes it's not always the best person. So I always choose that guy because what happens is they may be the best player on the team, but they don't feel like they have to do anything else. They just, hey, they feel like they're doing their job. But when you're the best player on the team, a lot of times you're getting the most press. You're getting the most notoriety. So I want to make sure that you're being those responsibilities are being added to you, not just because you're the best player, but again, we want to continue to round you out as a good young man and continue to put those pressures on you. So a lot of times it's going to be guys that's been around me for a while, that's been in the program, and then it's going to be times where the skill set dictates that. Yeah, I need you to step up not only as the best player on the team, but as the best person on the team, you know, so that's how I choose that.
Yeah. Do you give your captains any specific responsibilities over the course of the year?
All the time, you know, all the time. I'm like, if they're not getting to these off-season workouts, then that's on you. If they're missing class, if you're seeing them in the hallway and you don't say anything, that's on you. And I bring them in and we talk, you know, together, you know, about how the team feels. What's the culture like? How are they feeling about practice? You know, I want to always stay close with my captain because they feel like, okay, it's like when I get on them, they understand why. But when I get on other players and other players, like we were talking about earlier, they can kind of be that other assistant coach that can explain it to them. So, yeah, it's very important that I communicate with them. So, and I'll even text them personally about things and how we're, you know, how we're looking. And but definitely hold them accountable if things are not the way it should be as a team, because it's their team and it's their years, and I want them to be to have some. Say so and how their career is going and with their team.
Do you have a favorite team bonding activity that you do with your guys that you think really helps build, you know, kind of a family atmosphere and that cohesion amongst your players?
Yeah, absolutely. 17s across.
All right.
17 across.
I see. Okay.
And here's why. You can only be mad at one person, and that's me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blowing the whistle. I'm counting down. So they all have to do it together and push each other across. So they have to really motivate the next man that's next to them to make it, you know. Because if we make it, we're done. If we don't, we got another one, you know. So it builds character and team cohesion between them as players. And again, it all goes into who we are. It goes into everything is designed to bring the toughness, to bring the culture, and together they're doing it together on the floor. So that's my funnest team bonding moment, man. Like, I don't go do skydiving and fall backwards and the guy catch you. No, we're going to run, man. But I do what I do is in a, you know, what I do also, like, if we're in a tournament, those tournaments, those holiday tournaments, after the game, you know, once we get back in town, we'll go have pizza and, you know, probably have a college basketball game on and we'll go watch the game, have pizza and stuff and, you know, bring them together as a group. But, you know, those are things that I cherish the most, you know, seeing them laughing, seeing them joking. And it's funny because, tell you a funny story. We lost to Silverton 2 years ago at the Willamette tournament. I want to say it was one of those holiday tournaments at Willamette University. And, man, we literally got drugged through the mud. I mean, Silverton was excellent. They beat us probably by 50 points. And you get on the bus as a coach, it's like, to me, whether you lose by 5 or 50, it's still a loss. But when the players lose by 50, it does something to them. So, you know, instead of me probably, oh, man, get off the bus, we'll see you tomorrow, whatever, whatever. We went and had pizza, man, and they were laughing and joking. And I was talking to my coaches. They're like, man, that's really good that you did that, coach. I'm like, yeah, man, I mean, we lost. We're not where we need to be at yet. This is who we are right now. But you watch when we come out of this thing, we'll be right where Silverton is going to be as well. We'll be right there with them. We have to take a different route, and we have to build our players up. It's just a different way of doing it. But, again, we don't want to be good early. We want to be great late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your favorite drill?
I would say 3-on-2 continuous. It's like a traditional 3-on-2, 2-on-1, but what you do is you have three attacking the two at one end, and once the shot goes up, the defenders rebound, and then there's a player coming out from out of bounds that's the outlet guy. You're outletting to him, and then the two defenders are filling the lane, and we do that, and it just continues that way. And we'll do that for about 10 to 15 minutes of up-pace, fast tempo, and it just, and they love it. When I say continuous, oh my God, it's like they can't wait. But again, it's manipulating the running, it's manipulating the defense, it's manipulating the offense, and if it's too many passes, then it's the fast break drill. We're trying to get a shot quick. And that's what we do. We do it every single day. Every single day. If you're a 4-year guy, you would have run that drill 1,000 times by the time you left that program.
So you don't bring the third guy in until the shot goes up or until a rebound
is out? Until it's rebound and secured, and then that third guy comes in at the outlet, boom, and then the other two are filling. And then they're attacking the two down there. They rebound, boom, here comes outlet, and they come, and then and it's just a continuous 3-on-2.
Gotcha. I like it. All right. Well, Coach, that's all the questions I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and talking hoops. Really appreciate it.
Man, this is fun, man. And next year, let's get a game scheduled or something.
Let's go. I'm in.
Let's do it, brother, man. We'll get on a bus, man, head down to West Albany. I actually played with a West Albany grad back in the day. His name was Tyson Grum. Not sure if Tyson is still around the West Albany area, but this would have been in 1991. I believe they went to the state tournament that year. He's a left-hand point guard, tough as nails, man. Tyson Grum. That's what I remember West Albany from. He definitely represented you all well. Yes, sir.
Good. Love to hear that. If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Morgan, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach him up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.